Yes, I'm Rashi. So let's focus on some of the Rashis surrounding the section of the Birchas Yaakov, the Birchas Yitzchak. Let's really focus on that part. Okay, so the Parsha begins with some important information about Yitzchak's blindness. So Yitzchak couldn't really see well. Vatichyena einav meros. Now his not seeing is going to be instrumental in the brachos because he won't see who the right child is. Kobe said that. Now, why was Yitzchak blind? So we all think he was blind because of old age. His eyes lost some of their seeing capacity. But Rashi says he's blind for a totally different reason. Out of the clear blue, Rashi says. Obviously not out of the clear blue, but very, very interesting Rashi. Batichyena, we find the Rashi, that his blindness at least started at the Akedah. How did the Akedah make Yitzchak blind? So Rashi says that when Yitzchak was tied and bound on the Akedah, the heavens parted at Har Moriah. The Malachim came. We know there were Malachim at Har Moriah during the Akedah in Parshas Vayera. The Malachim are crying. That's the Medrash Rashi quotes. And the tears of the Malachim enter Yitzchak's eyes and render him blind. So it's a little bit of information about the Akedah we don't have in Parshas Vayera. Yitzchak goes blind, or at least he slowly goes blind, starting from that moment at the Akedah where angelic tears fell into his eyes. Now, why is this important? This is important because it's very important how to learn how to read Rashi, because Rashi has literally hundreds of midrashim. So when Rashi picks a medrash, it's not like he has one choice. He picks a medrash for many, many reasons to deliver messages. Sometimes Rashi picks a medrash not just to deliver messages, but also to create analogies and to create connections that you wouldn't otherwise create. Namely, Rashi is trying to get us to read the brachos of Yitzchak parallel to the Akedah. Rashi wants us to see this as Akedah part two. So Yitzchak, during the brachos to his children, is affected because of what happened in the Akedah. This is the sequel to the Akedah. Why is this the sequel to the Akedah? Because this is the selection of Yaakov from Esav. The Akedah is essentially the selection of Yitzchak from Yishmael. In the previous section, right before the Akedah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avram to listen to Sarah, to select Yitzchak, and not to select Yishmael. But Yitzchak hasn't received brachos yet, and we don't really find, at any point in time, Avram giving a bracha to Yitzchak. Avram dispatches Yishmael, but Avram never stands there and gives a bracha to Yitzchak. So one of the brachos from Avram transferred to Yitzchak, one of the selection of Kol Asher Tamar Lecha Sarish Ma B'Kolot Ki B'Yitzchak Yikar Lecha Zara cemented at the Akedah. The Akedah is essentially creating Yitzchak as the one. Yishmael isn't at the Akedah, at least going to the Pashas of the Pesukim. He's not, certainly not on the Mizbeach. So Rashi, by quoting the source of Yitzchak's blindness to me, the Akedah wants us to see these two Parshas analogously. What else in Parshas Birchas Yitzchak is similar to the Akedah? Well, first of all, there's Korbanos. There are animals being shechted. There are animals being sacrificed. So Yitzchak asks Esav to bring him some animals, and Esav doesn't bring an animal. Yaakov finds some other animal, the Shnei Gedoy Yizim. Most importantly, there's a knife. Sana kelecha telecha bekashtecha. So it's very clear that the instrument that's going to be used to ultimately sacrifice the animals are being highlighted. We know that they're there, but the Torah highlights them. But most importantly, the author of the Akedah is essentially, the human author of the Akedah is essentially whom? Sarah. Because Sarah instructs Avram to take Yitzchak, not Yishmael. Conceivably, if not for Sarah intervening, then Yishmael is at least on an equal footing with Yitzchak. Then when Hashem says, bring an Akedah, Avram could just easily choose Yishmael, because Yishmael hasn't been deselected. So Sarah's running the show at the Akedah. She's behind the scenes, but she's running the show. Who's running the show in Parshas Toldos behind the scenes? Rivka. Kol Asher Tamar Lecha Rivka, Shema Bekola. So by quoting this Medrash, Rashi wants us to read the brachas of Yaakov, of Yitzchak to Yaakov, as part two, as a continuation of the Akedah. Just like the Akedah was the delivery, because at the end of the Akedah, the Malach delivers the brachas ultimately to Yitzchak. He delivers them to Avram, but it's clear that they're going to be received by Yitzchak. And you look at them, the brachas are much, much more similar than you think. The brachas of the Malachim to Avram at the Akedah, and the brachas of Yitzchak to Yaakov. Now, why is this important for us to see the two as parallel? Okay, obviously because we want to see the history and the unfolding of the brachos, but also because we have a very, very difficult moral question in Parshas Toldos. How could Yaakov and Rivka conspire both against Esav, which is not so difficult, we'll see later, but certainly against Yitzchak? That's really the moral. I mean, Esav may deserve to have the brachos stripped from him, but Yitzchak certainly deserves to have his own decision. The answer is that this is all being orchestrated by Hashem, just like the Akedah is being orchestrated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we can't really understand the moral reasons for it, because it seems very difficult to justify human sacrifice. Of course, there's no human sacrifice. Similarly, this is all happening in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it looks like human beings, but Hashem is all preordaining this, and he just has human agents that are carrying out his tasks. Now, you see that in a different Rashi. Rashi, why don't you sit down? You can use a chair. You see that in a different Rashi. When Rivka describes the brachos, she inserts one word that you don't have beforehand. Yitzchak asks Esav to go prepare some food for him, and Rivka listens, and she conveys this to Yaakov, and she says to Yaakov, find it here, I'm sorry. Right, Pasuk Zayin. Havia litzayid, Rivka tells Yaakov, vaseli matamim, and make tasty food. Viochela, va'avarechecha lifnei Hashem, lifnei Mosi. When she relates Yitzchak's instructions to Esav, to Yaakov, oh, this is what I heard your father tell Esav, she tells Yaakov that Yitzchak asked Esav to bring food so that he would deliver the brachos lifnei Hashem. Yitzchak never said lifnei Hashem. Rivka has a clear sense that this is all unfolding in Hashem's presence. These are not human beings short-circuiting history. These are all brachos that Hashem wants to be delivered to Yaakov, because Rivka had that level of Ruach HaKodesh that Yitzchak did not have, the same way Sarah had a level of Ruach HaKodesh that Avram did not have. She spoke to the Ish Elokim when she was pregnant. She obviously had information that Yitzchak didn't. She knew that was information from HaKodesh Baruch Hu. So Yitzchak is delivering brachos. Rivka is delivering brachos, again, she says to Yaakov, I heard your father say, lifnei Hashem, just like at the Akedah, Yitzchak's passive, similarly during the brachos. I'm not solving the moral issue. I'm not saying how is it. I'm saying that you have a similar story to the Akedah. And the way to read them is similar, Rashi says, because the blindness of Yitzchak is caused by the Akedah. So this rivets our attention. Oh, I can't really understand Toldos unless I say Akedah is Yitzchak. And in both cases, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's clear that Akedah is Yitzchak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is directing traffic. And it's clear that in Akedah Yitzchak, we don't understand it. Similarly, it may not be so clear in Yitzchak's situation that Hashem is directing traffic, but he is. Rivka knows that. We have a moral question. It's the Akedah. It's Yitzchak's Akedah part two. Second of all, there's a consistent attempt of Rashi to remind us that Esav is flawed. And in particular, there's a particular flaw that Rashi continues. If you read five or six Rashis, he continues to return to. Esav is a thief. And if Esav is a thief, A, he's disqualified from continuing the brachas of Avram, because this is a project that has to start on moral grounds. And you can't start the project of Am Yisrael and Am HaNifchar as a thief. Remember, Avram's camels, Rashi says, were very careful not to graze, and Avram and Lot. So Avram was very, very careful about greed and theft. Avram and Stom, Avram's camels, Avram's very, very careful. Michut Yetzroch now. Throughout this story, Rashi's always highlighting, careful, Esav's going to steal something. So where do we first see that Esav's going to steal something? So first of all, when Yitzchak says, I want some food, because remember, that's what hunters do. Hunters compete with each other. Today, hunting is for sports. You don't really compete, but in those days, you were competing for food. So you had to out-hunt hunters. You weren't just out-hunting animals, you were out-hunting other hunters. So Yitzchak says, Tzudali. Why do you say Tzudali? She said, Tzudali Tzai. Remember, Esav's the Tzai Befeh. Rashi had already told us he tricks people with his mouth. So now he's a hunter. The words hunting here, Tzuda means hunting. Tzudali. Rashi says, Yitzchak says, Mina Hefker, Velo Mina Geza. Please bring me a regular animal from the woods. Don't hunt someone else's animal, which is much easier because they're in the corral. So Yitzchak's already aware of Esav's tendencies, and he makes a specific point saying, Tzudali. Now Esav then tells himself, Vayelech Esav Hasadeh Latzur Tzayid Lahavi. Or the Torah describes Esav's intention, Latzur Tzayid Lahavi. So Yitzchak says, Tzur Dali. But what does Esav say? Latzur Tzayid Lahavi. Rashi says, Lahavi. Esav's thinking, yeah, I'll try my best to get a regular deer from the woods, but if I can't shoot Bambi, I'll just take someone else's deer. Latzur Tzayid Lahavi. Im lo min hahefker, as Yavi min hagezel, I'll just steal from someone. I'll make it easier that way. Now Rivka turns to Yaakov and says, I want you to take, what does she tell him? Kachli, don't go hunting. Take my animals. Now how does Rivka have animals? Now Shekhani Shekhana Baila. Women in the Tanakh don't have any. So Rashi makes a point of saying, Shnei Gedei Kachli, that Yitzchak in his ksuva, a little bit of Maseches Ksuvos, actually allocated 2 sheep a day to Rivka, or 2 sheep per period. So Rashi, why do we need this information? Why do we need the information? It's written in Yitzchak's ksuva to Rivka. Rivka never collects her ksuva because Yitzchak outlives Rivka. You don't collect the ksuva when the husband outlives the wife. So why do we need this part of the ksuva? Because Esav is on the gzela track, Lahavi. Yitzchak's worried about Esav being on the gzela track. Rivka is not on the gzela track and she doesn't want the brachos to be taken through gzela, which we'll talk about in a moment. And this continues throughout Rashi as Big Day, Esav HaChamudos. Where does Esav get these beautiful clothing from? Does it go shopping online? Does it go to eBay? Does it go to Amazon? No, whose clothing are they really? Nimrod. Nimrod had special animal-colored clothing that he would use to seduce animals into being trapped, and Esav stole them from Nimrod. So throughout the section, there's an attempt to highlight 2 things. Esav and his team. That's why Rashi also says, why does Rivka have Esav's clothing? Why would she have Esav's clothing? Who should have Esav's clothing? Esav's wives should watch his clothing. Problem is, Esav didn't trust his own wives because they'd steal his clothing. So he deposited his clothing. This is what Rashi throughout the section. So there's an attempt to illustrate the difference between Esav as a thief and Yaakov as someone who's very, very careful about theft. Now, what does this accomplish in the larger story? So first of all, it's reminding us that, again, I'm not solving the moral issue. I think that there's something that has to happen. We don't know why it has to happen. Why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu to make it happen this way? But you can't start a moral nation from, or you can't extend a moral nation when someone is a thief. That's already Mabul territory. We've seen this already. We've seen failed civilizations because of moral breakdown. So it's complete moral breakdown in Esau's world. It's highlighted by theft, and that's why there's a justification why he can't be the one. But on top of that, this is really important. Who's also a thief in this parsha? Yaakov. Yaakov is stealing Esav's bracha. And that we can't understand why HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted that to happen, just like we can't understand the Akedah. But Yaakov doesn't represent a complete moral breakdown. There is a moment that he has to commit a morally challenging event, esei docha lo tase. But Yaakov didn't say, hey, you know what? I may as well just be a thief. I might just let it all rip and let it all fall if I'm stealing anyway. He's very morally careful. Sometimes when we place ourselves into situations, we have to perform something. Let me give you an example. The danger of a white lie. It's important sometimes to tell a white lie. Beis Hillel says you should tell a white lie when you enter a chasana, and the kala just isn't so attractive. So according to Beis Shammai, what should you say? Kala kamoshe, you're ugly. Whereas according to Beis Hillel, what should you say? Kala navachasuda, do you think she's pretty? Maybe not. But mei darchei shalom, you have to tell a lie. But what's the challenge of darchei shalom? Lying becomes addictive. And you say, well, I like this. I'll lie as much as I can. That's why I have to be very, very careful about when you tell white lies, and very careful not to let it become habitual. So Yaakov could say, look, I'm in this situation. My mother isn't relaying information to me from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I trust her. She sees things just like Sarah saw things. For whatever reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created me this way. I have to perform this task. Same way I have to kill Amalek, same way. But do you let yourself be defined that way? So, okay, therefore, I'm performing this act, I'll define myself. Yaakov and Rivka being very, very careful. It's not just the contrast to Esav, but Yaakov and Rivka very, very careful to pay their taxes on time, to dot the I's and cross the T's, to be as legal as they can, because they know they're in dangerous territory. And they don't want themselves to become thieves. And you'll see this in Parshas Vayetze, that Yaakov is the most honest, honest broker, even with people who are swindlers and manipulators, and even with the sheep. So sometimes you find yourself in... Life isn't always black and white and binary. Sometimes you have to act in certain ways, and it's hard to know when to, but you can't let them become your habit and to define you. So this whole contrast between Esav's thievery and Yaakov's honesty, at least with processing the korbanos, is meant to demonstrate 2 things. One is to give us a platform. This person can't be the continuation of moral history. Now, why does Hashem create Yosef first? Why doesn't he just create Yaakov first without going through the whole melodrama? That's an interesting question. We could talk about that some other times. But number two is that Yaakov and Rivka, knowing that they're put into this morally compromised situation, but they have to, they don't let it all spiral. They're very, very careful, even though they're in this very difficult situation. So two very interesting, I would say, meta-rashis. One meta-rashi to get us to read. Think about this when you read Parshas Toldos. What else strikes you as similar between the brachas from Yitzchak to Yaakov and Esav receiving a second bracha? What strikes you as similar to the Akedah? I will mention a few things, but I'm trying to open your eyes to read these two sections in parallel. Why is it important to read the two sections in parallel? Why does Rashi want us to see this section, Shmarcha ultimately, want us to read Toldos as the sequel to Vayera? Number two is, why is there a constant resurfacing in Rashi, a constant harping upon Esav was stealing clothing, didn't trust his wives, he would steal, and Yaakov was very, very careful. How does that serve as a counter story to the larger story that Yaakov was stealing the brachas from Esav? How do the two stories interact? So these are not just specific Rashis, but meta-Rashis to get us to read these sections more subtly and nuanced. Okay? Sometimes you have to see not just what Rashi's saying, but how it ripples throughout the entire section. What is Rashi trying to accomplish? Rashi ultimately is not just giving line-by-line Birushim, he's trying to get us to read, like you'd study with Rabbi Liebtai, how to read the section, what ideas pop out in the section that aren't necessarily there in the text that the Medrash can help us understand. This is the interaction between Medrash and text. Okay?
Thank you, Rabbi.
You're welcome.